and open a public hearing on House Bill 2003. I think J.L. Wilson has signed up. J.L., if you want to come on up. Russ Walker.
Thank you, Chair Knope and members of the House PERS Committee. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing NFIB, currently with just over 12,000 employers in my organization. House Bill 2003 is the most important bill of this legislative session, and it is the highest priority for NFIB. The search for additional revenue for the 2003-2005 biennium starts right here with this bill. And it has a dual purpose, because not only does it raise revenue, and you've heard a lot about that, this biennium without raising any taxes, but it has the dual purpose of being a confidence builder in terms of restoring public trust in state government. And that's really the issue I want to talk about with 2003, and that's the credibility issue. Because really, in the absence of PERS reform, as far as my, of which I should add, 2003 should be the bare minimum. There is really little to no perceived financial crisis in the state of Oregon in the absence of PERS reform. And I want to be clear about where this disparity comes from. For the members that I represent, 12,000 small businesses in the state of Oregon, the average business pays about 11% in average payroll taxes, 11% which goes to workers' comp, unemployment, Social Security, those types of payroll taxes that are associated with every firm. And that runs true for state government too. Then you get into the disparities. What are health care costs in the private sector? I can say with certainty that my members are able to, if they offer health care at all, their costs are probably about 7 to 8% of payroll. That's because they can offer insurance for their employee at $300, $350 a month. State government's payroll costs with health care, I'm pretty certain, are in the double digits, probably 12 to 15%, because you're looking at $600, $700, $800 allocations for health care. And then we get into the issue of retirement. Most of my members, if they have retirement plans at all, have simple 401ks, of which the employer will usually match on average up to 3 to 4%. That is the retirement plan that is predominant in the private sector. So when you're talking about a 2001 valuation of the PERS system that is 22.48% of payroll, you can see where the public, and in particular my small business owners, think that that's quite obscene. 22.48. Total payroll costs for a business, including payroll taxes, health care, and retirement, barely push 22%, let alone retirement costs alone at 22.48%. And I hope that really grabs hold of you, because that in essence is where the disparity comes from. If you were talking about 45 to 50% of costs relative to payroll, if you're paying 45 to 50% of payroll on health care, retirement, and other associated taxes, that would be absolutely murderous to our private sector economy. There would be no private sector in Oregon if those kind of costs had to be incurred. You talk about the unfunded liability amortization rate of 5.28% of payroll. Again, just the unfunded liability cost of 5.28% is greater than the typical employer average, contribution average of I'd say 4% in the private sector. It's just, the disparities are just absolutely glaring. And so when you talk about public trust and public confidence in state government, really House Bill 2003, it gets to the root of the issue. And that's really what I want to impress upon this committee. Because as long as state government is perceived to have money to burn on this type of thing, then it really sends a strong message about how government perceives the seriousness of its own problem. And that is, if you're not concerned about it, then we're not concerned about it. And that's tough. You know, the problem's not going to go away. 2003, I want to stress, should be the minimum that we achieve. Because when you talk about bringing those costs from 22.48% down to 12.65, yeah, 12.65 still sounds pretty out of line, but man, it's a great step. It's a great step, and one I hope that you take. So 2003 really for us represents the ability of state government to lead by example, to make a tough decision and put its house in order first. And that really, that would speak volumes about this legislature and your ability to make a tough decision to do what's right on this issue. That concludes my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions specific to what I talked about.
Russ, why don't you go, and then we'll take questions.
For the record, Russ Walker, I'm the Northwest Director of Citizens for Sound Economy. We have approximately 12,000 members in the state of Oregon. Our membership is not necessarily confined to small business owners. It includes big business owners, small business owners. It also includes public employees, as well as retired individuals. Our membership is driven strictly by the issues of smaller government and more responsible government. I just have to echo a lot of the comments made by JL. And let me just say this: House Bill 2003 is the minimum, I think, of what we need to do. Our concern as we follow this issue is that House Bill 2003 has an impact of it'll affect the unfunded liability about $5 billion, just over $5 billion. That is a very good step. However, our concern is it doesn't get us to where we need to be. When the new numbers come out, we expect them to be upwards of $15 billion or more. And if that is the case, then it puts us about a third of where we need to be. Is it a good step? Yes. But like JL said, with numbers like 22.4%+ going to the cost of an employee's retirement, when the private sector has an average of somewhere between 3-5%, there is a big difference there, and it is actually insulting to the working man out on the street when he learns how much money is actually spent on retirement for public employees in comparison to what he receives in his life. We're concerned, of course, that the number only drops to 12.65% from 22.48. It's a good move. Don't get me wrong, I want to commend the committee for moving that far, but we'd like to see that number down about 5%. We'd like to see it down where the private sector is. If the state of Oregon, especially in a year like now when we're looking for money, looking for ways to fund state government, we can't reduce that number further. Something is so excessive that it's offensive when people find out about it. If we can't fix that and use that money to help pay for the programs people do care about, then we're never going to fix the problems that we have facing us here in the state. I mean, it's just if we can't address the fundamental issue of PERS reform. And I actually got to tell you, I'm actually shocked to find that there's people that think that 2003 is not reasonable. 2003 is the minimum of what we need to do. And it shocks me to think that anybody thinks that we should be passing out money like it's candy, especially in a time like now, when our unfunded liability continues to grow. I don't want to just repeat what JL said, but I agree with everything he said. And just to reiterate, Citizens for Sound Economy is in favor of fundamental reform and putting in place a defined contribution system that echoes the private sector system, that is in line with what the what PERS was originally set up to do, which is provide a reasonable retirement for public employees, and in that process also keeping to the commitments promised to public employees. But I think this is 2003 is the minimum, and 12% is actually a bit offensive to, I know, my members, as well as most Oregonians when they look at those numbers. So I'll conclude with that and take questions.
Questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is JL. JL, you used the safe, or the safe, the PERS contribution rate of 22.48. Is that right?
Correct.
Have any feel, how many members do you represent, say?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Butler, I represent 12,000 employers. They employ roughly 150,000 Oregonians.
So amongst the 12,000 employers, Mr. Chair, if I can follow up, amongst those 12,000 employers, do you have any feel for what their contribution rates may be for their employee retirement plans?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Butler. I hope to make clear in my testimony that the average simple 401k that is provided by my employer members is usually accompanied by a 3-4% employer match. They will match up if the employee contributes 3%, they'll match up to 3%. Sometimes they'll match up to 4%. You know, what the employee contributes is obviously their preference.
And an additional follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Amongst those 12,000 members, and again, you're representing certainly well over 100,000 employees, do we know how many folks are covered by these various plans that the private plans that you may? Of the 12,000, do you have any feel for how many of those may have 401ks and simple and other kinds of plans?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Butler. That it exposes a little bit of a gap in my knowledge about who provides what. But I could easily get it for you back at the office, but I'm going to take a stab and say probably three quarters.
About three quarters. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2003? Close the public hearing on House Bill 2003. You guys want to testify on the legislator bill? You excited about that? Jay, are you excited about the legislator taking legislators out of purse?
All right.
We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2008 and House Bill 2020. Does anybody want to testify on the successor plan bills? I know PERS agency had some information in regards to successor plans. I thought it might be appropriate to bring forward at this time. I don't know that we need to spend a lot of time on the detail, but I think we do want people to know what's happening out there in other states. And I know you put some information together that was in our packets. Jim?
We did indeed, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll just speak for 10 minutes or so to summarize the data that we're handing out. I'm pleased to deliver to the committee two analyses that have been assembled by our staff. The first is a memorandum that outlines four distinct approaches to pension policy reform that have been implemented in other states, usually over the last 5 to 10 years, and some examples of each. The second is a data matrix. It contains summary data on a wide variety of state pension plans across the United States of all types and all structures. And we continue to add to these two analyses as we uncover additional information. My remarks today will be brief and are just intended to summarize and comment on the trends that we think the data tells us. In that respect, I'd like to briefly note the following. There appears to be no industry standard or best practice state pension public pension plan. Instead, we see in the data an incredibly diverse set of plan structures across the country. And this is somewhat in contrast to the private sector, where pension plan structures do vary, but much less so than in the private sector. I can only assume, and it's just an inference, that the various states are basically putting together pension structures that meet their particular needs and what they desire for their citizens. And that accounts for the incredible variety you see in the public sector. The second point I'd make is the majority of assets that are held in public pension plans are in defined benefit plans. This is because defined benefit plans were the first plans instituted in the public sector and have been accumulating assets for the better part of a century. Defined contribution plan structures have entered into the public sector only recently, and therefore they've had very little time to gather assets. As various concerns of one sort or another have arisen in states about their pension policy, states have taken four distinct paths toward reform. I would try to summarize these four paths as follows. The first one is a set of states that have replaced a DB plan structure completely with a successor defined contribution plan. This is something that, of course, has occurred quite a bit in the private sector over the last 20 years, but it's been relatively infrequent to see a DB plan completely replaced by a DC plan. The state of Michigan has done so, and several weeks ago, the governor of Massachusetts has proposed to move that state from a DB plan to a DC plan. The Michigan DC plan is outlined in our analysis. The Massachusetts DC plan concept is not yet available. We're working to get hold of it. The second path is a set of states that have added a defined contribution companion or alternative plan. And this is a one way to use a defined contribution plan in concert with a DB plan. This is a side-by-side pairing of a DB and a DC alternative. And you have seen that quite a bit more often. We have examples in Ohio, Florida, Montana, South Carolina, and I believe there are several more in the making. In this particular case, this is not a true hybrid structure because in most of these instances, the public employee is offered a chance to choose one or the other, but not both. And we'll talk a little bit about that in terms of its difference than a true hybrid in a moment. The third path is to replace an existing DB plan with a successor DB plan. A couple of states have taken the opportunity to devise a new DB plan structure to replace an old one. Examples include Missouri and Tennessee. And the fourth path is to replace an existing plan with a hybrid successor plan. I would distinguish this from the second path, that is a companion or an alternative DC plan, because a hybrid plan melds DB and DC together, and every employee participates in both simultaneously, so that on the DB side, the employee gets high benefit predictability, but the employer accepts cost uncertainty. On the DC side, it's exactly the opposite. The employer gets cost certainty, and the employee accepts investment risk and longevity risk. And the participation in these two plans simultaneously, these two plan structures, is meant to share risk and can be relatively simple, provided that there are no financial entanglements between the two. I think this committee and your task force before this committee heard quite a bit of testimony about how in our plan, the DC aspects of our plan are entangled with the DB aspects of our plan, making for a very unique plan structure. One can see this plan in other states. Washington State, are to the north, just adopted a plan structure like this. I believe it's their TRIS 3 plan for their teachers. And we see this often in the private sector where a company, and I believe Boeing is an example, would have a core DB plan alongside a 401k plan that contains a match as well. Again, the whole idea of trying to produce benefit certainty on one side and cost certainty on the other as a way of sort of sharing the risks and rewards of pension costs. After reading the descriptions, and I've read most of them over the course of the last year from these plans as my staff has assembled them, I would venture to say that they boil down to a few simple but very difficult to achieve objectives. The first one is to ensure that the compensation packages for public employees have a component that generates, along with Social Security, a retirement income stream that, in combination with the other elements of the compensation package, is sufficient to attract and retain quality staff and managers. That's not easy to do. The second thing is to decide how the costs of providing this retirement stream are to be distributed between employees and employers. I have a few comments to conclude with on that topic. The third objective that seems to be enmeshed in every public policy reform of a pension plan is to decide how the risks of providing this retirement stream, investment risk, longevity risk, benefit increase risk, and so on, are to be distributed between employers and employees. And the fourth is trying to keep the retirement system and its operations as simple and as transparent as possible. Plan structures are the means by which the last three objectives are addressed. DC employer matches and DB benefit formulas are the means by which benefit levels are set. And you may recall that I've often said that there are two issues in a successor plan. It's plan structure and what the benefit levels are, and any plan structure can produce very high or low benefit levels. Allow me to include with an example of plan structure and how it influences one of these core objectives. And that is the issue of risk sharing. If this body chooses to consider sharing risk between employers and employees, and it's not a requirement, they can be assigned all to one or all to another. But to the extent that risk sharing might be a policy objective, there are two approaches. One is under DB plans, risk sharing is accomplished by having the employer and the employee rates rise and fall with the emerging true costs of the DB pension plan structure, which, as we know, has some uncertainty associated with it. Arizona and Idaho use this method to share risk. Under a hybrid plan that has a DC component, risk sharing is accomplished by each employee being simultaneously enrolled in both the cost-certain DC plan and the benefit-certain DB plan. As I said, Washington State and Boeing seem to have moved toward this method of sharing risk. Note, however, that risk is only truly shared in this way, truly shared system-wide, if all employees are enrolled in both plans. Thus, the voluntary companion DC plans that may be chosen by employees, like we have observed in Ohio, Florida, and Montana, really don't achieve systematic risk sharing across the entire system, because employee choice of DB versus DC does not result in any risk sharing. It either ends up at the employee level with the employee bearing all of the risk or none of the risk, as opposed to a hybrid plan which smooths the risk over the entire participant group, employees and employers. With that, I'll stop, and if there are any questions, I hope this information is responsive to the committee's request, and we would be happy to continue to work on this and keep you updated, for example, on movements in other states. Massachusetts, I mentioned, is one that's already in motion.
Questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you. Mr. Reichler, it's still safe to say that Oregon is the most complex of all those state plans you look at.
Chair Canope, Representative Butler, we've had third parties come in and assess our plan, and they rate us as one of the most complex they've seen. I believe New York State is one that they rate as equally complex, maybe even a bit more so. But yeah, we're unique in many ways.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Anybody else wishing to testify on the successor plan bills? Okay. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2008, House Bill 2020, and open a public hearing on the 2407. I received a memo here from Representative Richardson on possible amendments. Anybody else have amendments in legislative council for the legislator's bill?
I may have some, though.
You may? Okay. Anybody else? Anybody wishing to testify on House Bill 2407? Nope. Okay. Just checking. All right. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2407. I'm working with legislative council on draft amendments. I think distributed to your offices was the booklet called Choices. Mm-hmm. I hope you all got it. It talks about the OUS systems defined contribution plan. I think the amendments are going to come out very similar to something like that, with a contribution rate in the 5-6% range. Some have suggested maybe we just didn't have a system at all. However, I would like to pass a bill this session so that would take legislators out of the PERS plan, put it in a more private sector like plan that also is not administered by an agency that we oversee, and we oversee their budget. So I'll look forward to seeing amendments hopefully by the end of the week. If we have them available and ready, I'd like to go to work session on Thursday this week if possible. Any questions? Anything else for the good of the committee? I think that's all on our agenda today. Nope. Thank you, committee. I appreciate your efforts and look forward to Thursday. Committee adjourned.